This is Bernie Lubbers, the global brand ambassador for whiskeys for Heaven Hill Distillery out of Bardstown in Louisville, Kentucky, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Dude, I've missed you so much.
It's been a long 3 weeks.
It has been. It has been. How the fuck are you, man?
I'm good. Busy as always. Running around from bar to bar. We're about to open up a new one.
Yeah.
Honey Bee.
Upstairs.
Upstairs, where the old Cienfuegos was. Yeah. Cienfuegos ran a 9-year run, and we decided to close it on New Year's Eve and do a full remodel. We installed a bar. It didn't have a bar before. It was just a service bar. You couldn't actually sit at the bar. Yeah. We've installed a bar. We're going to make it, kind of West Texas poker room honky-tonk. A lot of crushed velvet, red and black and green. A lot of American whiskey and American beer.
Are you just designing this bar for me to come there and
I'm just designing
out?
It in my mind right now. Yes. Yeah, for you. I'm trying to lure you back to New York City. You've been away too long.
I've been away. But it's been good stuff. You know, I was just in D.C. yesterday and the last few days for Gin World. Fun little thing. There's a whole conference based on one spirit.
That's outstanding. I didn't even know about that. You mentioned it now at lunch, but I didn't get to dig in.
Yeah, well, Gin World's like they do it. It was based out of St. Louis, and they've done it in multiple cities. But, you know, gin in D.C., you know, it's the Gin Ricky is like the official
drink of DC.
Yeah, so it's really fun to like catch up with a lot of people there and like check out some of the newer spots. And I love DC. Some of the best food in this country, I think, comes out of DC.
Well, you know, you've got such a contingency of international folks.
Everyone's
living there.
Represented there. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you got a little absolutely. Something everything. So Gin World, is it mostly domestic gins or is Gin World? So it's
Gin
gins
World,
from the
yeah.
world.
I mean, we're all citizens of the planet, so yeah, it's like we can say it's domestic.
In that regard, sure.
Wow, already getting deep.
Yeah. It's because we haven't seen each other in a while.
That's right. So like there were some different tastings and seminars based on like different like you know everything from like Geneva to London Dry to you know like kind of more contemporary American gins and. It's really cool, man. You know, there's some, and also like, you know, there was a huge representation of like Scottish gins and Japanese gins as well, which was really cool.
That is cool. And you were there, of course, representing Brooklyn gin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vibes.
So, yeah. Just keep the vibes alive, man.
How's California? Talk about that some. I don't ever hear about California. Oh, that's where you moved, but it seems like you don't really live there either now.
I mostly live in an airplane. So the thing is, I live in Marin County and just like North Bay, San Francisco. And there's so much cool stuff happening in Marin. The thing is, like, it's all like pretty like destination-y, you know, like it's kind of like how LA was like back in the day where it's like, oh shit, if I got to go to like West Hollywood or whatever, like to go check out this cool bar, it's like I got to drive there until like Uber and Lyft and like those kind of car services came around. But San Francisco is kind of the same way. Obviously, you still have the same like car service. They're all like all the tech companies like that started that stuff were based
right,
out of
exactly.
there.
Right, exactly. Or nearby.
But it's kind of cool because like there are a lot of these like destination restaurants and bars that like you kind of have to work for it, you know?
Yeah.
You have to get there. And once you're there, you're like, oh man, there's really cool stuff. There's a new bar that used to be this restaurant called The Drawing Board, and it just flipped concepts, actually, not dissimilar to, like, Cienfuegos 2.
Sometimes
Honey
you have
Bee.
To.
But the owners, they opened up this new spot called, well, it's still like before it was a restaurant with like a really strong bar program, and now it's like more like bar that's supported by like some snacks, like cool. some small places,
cool.
stuff, which yeah. are very delicious. But it's anyway, it's called Whisper Sisters, and it's like a really exciting spot that that it's in Petaluma. That's just really cool. Now I live in San Rafael, so it's like it's about a 20 to 30 minute drive up north. So like you don't really get to like like dive deep into it because right. like you've got to drive after. And I'm not promoting drinking and driving, by the way. I'm actually saying some yeah, responsible shit.
It's not
right
a
now.
Good thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel super empowered and lucky that I operate bars in New York City where no one drives ever.
Yeah.
And I don't have to think about it.
Well,
you
usually
you drive here and you aren't driving home. I know that.
Yeah. I mean, like, in like we've all learned from your experience that, you know, like when people drive, they often run over people on their bicycles.
Exactly.
And you broke your humerus, which no, isn't as funny,
not as, funny as it sounds.
But anyway, yeah, so California's really great. And yeah, just scouting locations out there to open up some more stuff.
Outstanding.
So, yeah, it's good.
Well, can't wait to hear about all that. Right.
Let's talk about the other people in the room.
Yeah, let's do. So in the room today, we've got, in the studio with us today, we've got a couple people that are visiting down from Vermont. They run a place called the Archives Bar. We got Allison Marlar and Sean McKenzie. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Okay. Hi. Thanks a lot.
So
Didn't you went to culinary school in Vermont?
Yes and no. I went to culinary school in California. I taught
oh,
at culinary
taught
school
there, yeah.
in Vermont. Yeah, I taught at the New England Culinary Institute up in Montpelier. But you guys are living in where are you?
Burlington, right?
We're in Burlington. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Burlington.
Which is the bigger city in Vermont. It's just Montpelier, where I live, the smallest state capital, 8,000 residents. I always joke like now I live in New York. Like there's 8,000 people on my block.
Yeah. You
know? Like what a dramatic change that was for me. But you guys run the Archives Bar. Archives is a spot that's like arcade games, right?
Oh,
And craft beer.
Yep.
Two great tastes that taste great together. Talk about how that works.
So the partners from the Archives, they went to a barcade probably when it first opened in Williamsburg. They love the concept.
Yeah, barcade's a local bar of similar ilk, I guess.
Yeah.
No, they have one in I think, Hoboken or Jersey City too, right?
They've got a few now. Yeah, I know there's one on St. Mark's. There's one, the original ones in Williamsburg, and I think
they have one in Vegas.
More. Maybe
they should, if they don't.
Yeah,
well, you
Dubai?
Should if they don't.
Dubai, let's hit all the big spots.
Yeah, I think they were largely inspired by that original concept. They'd been planning to do it for a while. We opened just about 3 years ago now. We try to do a lot of craft beer. Vermont's got a phenomenal craft beer scene.
Lots of choices.
Burlington, though small, has a really, really good, vibrant bar scene. We do craft cocktails as well. And obviously the arcade component is a fundamental part of the concept as well.
How do you keep somebody drinking if their hands are busy playing an arcade game?
Well,
that's my question.
Good for pacing yourself.
Yeah.
You hang out for longer, trying to get that high score.
Also, like I was gonna say, like
trying to get that high score.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the thing is, like we're always like boom, 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 boom here in New York City,
yeah.
And like when I was hanging out in Burlington with a friend of ours, he's been on the show before a couple times, Justin Lane Briggs.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he's from up there.
Yeah,
and so JLB. Like we, yeah. The thing is, like, the pace is a lot slower,
mm-hmm.
and we were hanging out for a lot longer, and, you know...
Well,
yeah,
that, I mean, I guess you're also still capturing revenue, right? People are plunking in dollars and quarters and whatnot into the machines.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I think that... I don't know that it makes us necessarily unique, but that sets us apart from, I think, a lot of the other arcade bars is that We're acutely aware of the fact that we're primarily a bar first, and then an arcade. So, I don't want to say the arcade games are a distraction necessarily, but I think the attraction is the bar.
It's an amenity,
and it's a reason to stay. Exactly.
Sure. I know that at like Barcade and Two Bit, the two bars that do this that I know of here in New York City, are both focused mostly on like vintage stuff. Is that your vibe as well?
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff.
Like I'm in there playing Tapper. You know that game?
Yeah.
The little beer guy sliding the beer down
Tapper's
the bar.
Tapper's the first one when you walk in the door, man.
That's awesome.
Right there.
Yeah, I think it's actually the
Tapper's
first one.
Tapper's definitely a crowd pleaser. We do have some newer games as well. We just got a new pinball machine fairly recently. That was a recreation of a Williams machine from 1993. It's called Attack from Mars. So we got the new recreation with the LEDs and stuff, and that one's definitely been a lot of fun since we brought that one in too. So we try and have a good balance, but it's definitely more on the classic focus. Yeah, you got to have Galaga, Centipede, Pac-Man.
Do you have the cup holders on the sides of the pinball machines?
We actually have the railings in between the machines. So, yeah, the cup holders, they're with all of our different cocktail glassware and stuff. It's easier to have the railings.
Just have a rail.
Yeah,
it's funny. The three you just listed, that you listed as classics, those are the three machines that were in my dad's bar when I was 12 years old.
Are you wearing an Atari shirt right now, by the way?
Close. This is my favorite shirt from Stefan Waz.
The Amari shirt. Right. Amazing.
But it fits with the theme of the day, yes.
Exactly.
Most definitely.
We had Centipede, Galaga, Pac-Man, and what was actually my favorite was Space Invaders.
Yeah.
Which
What was your first one?
When my dad sold the bar, we kept Space Invaders. We had it in our house.
Nice. What was the first video game you ever played, Southern?
I'm going to say it was probably Pac-Man or Centipede. Yeah. I mean, like, I was 12 years old when my dad had the bar, so...
Well, back when you were a kid, there were only, like, two video games in existence.
Yeah, the video itself was brand new. Video itself was a brand new thing.
Playing a lot of Pong.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely played Pong, so maybe that's the first thing I played.
Yeah.
At my buddy Craig Dutton's house, he had Pong in his house.
I remember being
TV,
like...
You had that twisty dial.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was weird, because the dial twisted right and left, but the Pong moved vertically, so it was, like, hard to get your mind around it. You know, you hold it sideways. Like, that was your grip.
You're freestyling it, man.
So this is a concept. You've been open for 3.5 years, and you're also focusing on... So craft beer is the big part, right? But then the craft bar as well?
I would say in Vermont, beer is definitely king.
For sure.
In Burlington, though, cocktails are definitely really taking off. I would say...
It's a town of size, right? It's relatively cosmopolitan.
Yeah,
right?
It's a pretty small town. It feels a lot larger than it is, I think.
I remember when I lived in Montpelier, which is now 20 years ago, but like Montpelier was 8,000, Burlington was like almost 40,000. So it was five times as big. And like that's where we'd go when we wanted to like cut loose, because in Montpelier at the time, there were literally two bars.
Yeah.
And I wasn't allowed to go to them.
I went to one
for
of them.
For reasons we won't discuss.
I think I got a t-shirt from one of those bars that you used to frequent, that dive bar.
Well, they were both dives, believe that.
But there was like live music there, and it was kind of like a hoggy talky like dive bar.
Yeah, I'm struggling right now to remember the name, because I literally wasn't allowed to go to them. I couldn't go to either one. I found that out.
But you...
Within my first week of being there. I couldn't. I couldn't. The full disclosure here, it's not a big deal. It's that I was an instructor at the New England Culinary Institute, and I wasn't allowed to fraternize with students. And bet your ass, that's where the students were.
Yeah.
Right? So I basically wasn't allowed to go to the two bars.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And one was called, like, Henry's. It's just named after a guy. And the other one that you're talking about had live music I can't remember the name of.
Yeah, I'll have to do some research on it. Anyway, but, you know, to me, like... A lot of times, like you're saying too, it's like that there's a huge brewing scene in Vermont. Massive. There's also like a lot of cool little distilleries.
Yeah, popping up everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
We actually, a funny story.
We'll jump into your funny story, but I want to know, do you focus on local beers?
We do.
And do you also focus on those local spirits?
We do carry quite a few local spirits. We certainly try to support, especially the ones that are distilling all themselves. But there are some really good brands as well that are local brands that are purchasing at least some of their product. We certainly try to feature local spirits.
Cool.
As much as we can. Obviously, pricing of local spirits sometimes it makes it hard to give a menu placement as much as we'd like to.
Right.
I would say we probably have a larger focus just because of the amount of breweries that we have in Vermont. We almost always have probably 8 to 10, maybe more local beers on draft.
Yeah, how many drafts do you have?
We have 24 lines.
Let's talk about that kind of stuff. How big is the space?
It's
got to be
big
to have all those machines. How many machines do you have?
It's
35, give or take.
Between 35 and 40 now. We rotate them out and such. We have a full-time technician, so when things go down, we take them off the floor and bring in different games and that kind of thing. So we've got, I believe, around 35 on the floor right now, and
that
then
sounds right.
And then a good amount in storage that we're working on.
What a hidden cost that is. We have a full-time technician.
Yeah, seriously.
And storage for the games that aren't on the floor. Like, wow, that's a thing I wouldn't even, like, that's a whole new piece to think about.
Yeah, I think the games are effectively a wash. I mean, they pay for themselves, but a new pinball machine is a pretty substantial purchase.
Right, and I have to assume that you're not even purchasing new ones, you're purchasing old ones, so they're probably even more.
Yeah.
Especially
like
if
I
they
said,
have any cachet,
Attack,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Attack from Mars, we purchase new, but we definitely buy a lot of refurbished machines, and then, you know, opening them up, you never know what it looks like inside, who's worked on it, and that sort of thing. So
right.
The old ones
always a
can be
new
a lot
adventure.
More with the price of fixing them.
Well, especially actual pinball machines, a lot of mechanical pieces that are moving around in there.
Yeah, it's crazy when you open those things up.
This is so, like, to me, I'm like, extremely fascinated by this because, you know, like, I know you and I are both, like motorcycle dudes and,
yeah,
like we're tinkerers, you know, and, like, so, like.
Yeah, like, our technician was a mechanic, so.
Yeah,
similar,
I was going to say, like, you have to be, like, basically a mechanic,
you
know, to work on these things, and, like, you have to understand, like, all the circuitry and everything. Like, there was a, my, like, childhood best friend, he and his sister bought they didn't buy it. The parents bought it for him, but they bought this old, like, 1940s Roy Rogers pinball machine, and, like, they were constantly working on it because it had to be worked on. It was, like, wooden. It was a wooden pinball machine. It was, like, early, you know.
These
and it
things
was,
require,
you,
like,
you
a lot of...
You think about that in your house. We have them on a bar floor. You're getting hundreds of plays a night.
I know,
so.
Right?
Right, by people who don't necessarily care about
bit.
It, right? They're just like, what's this? Roy Rogers, bang, bang, you know, slamming into it.
Yeah. Tilt.
Tilting it, yeah. Yeah. Tilt.
So to me, like, that's like, like, to me, that's like a whole thing on its own. And then you allow people to come in and get drunk
and touch it, right?
Like, around and touch it. And
like, I mean, I get nervous about everything that we have on the bars that people are going to touch. And I try and make sure that, okay, if I'm going to have it in reach of people, it's nearly indestructible.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not the case with these things. These are things that are relatively, you know, they need. You know, do you have signs on some of them that are like, please use gently, this one's old?
Yeah, they go down
like,
a lot.
Like, you know, be kind to this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we're lucky we have a good tech because they break all the time.
Man.
Yeah, he's
so,
always busy.
Also, like, so, like, in this situation, because, like, one of my favorite, like, local bars in Brooklyn is called Bar Great Harry, and they have pinball machines in the back, and they often rotate them out, but they're one of the, like, stops on the tour of, like, like pinball leagues and,
sure.
Like, mm-hmm. Like, tournament, like, play. Do you do that kind of stuff at the bar?
We don't have any leagues set up at the bar currently. We do work closely with the pinball co-op. They have a location not far from us where I believe they're up to 15 machines on the floor, and they do league nights and competitions. I actually have my silver trophy from the last league I competed in behind the bar, so it's definitely fun. People definitely get into the game components for sure.
Alex is, like, by far the best at pinball of anybody on the staff.
Just on the staff, we have plenty of guests that can totally annihilate my scores. I have yet to be on a leaderboard.
You should have like a triathlon situation, like, at your bar where like it's a cocktail competition, and then like video game, and then like beer bong. And like, right. Like something like that.
Yeah. Make a cocktail, play a video game and get a high score. Make another cocktail, play a pinball machine. Yeah. Like a little relay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've done a lot of tournament events where we have someone come in and do a sponsor. We'll bring, you know, some products in on the bar. Most of the time it's been beer that we've mm-hmm. brought in, bring them on draft and have a competition and give out a bunch of swag for the person that gets the high score. They get bragging rights for the night. It's a lot of fun.
That's like built in. Like, it's great. It's built in entertainment. I mean, not built in, but baked in, right? You still got to pay that maintenance guy and storage. Those two costs alone are like floating around in my head. Like, Jesus, man, that's potentially crippling.
Yeah.
Because even to have a space like this means you got to have a lot of square footage. That's rent. Like, all the numbers are, I'm crunching New York numbers, right?
I can
see
your brain melting right now.
A little bit. Yeah. That's because it's all the shit's on my mind right now with the new bar.
Yeah, it took them a long time to find the space to open up. We got really lucky. We're in a location that used to be the Burlington Free Press, so we got a decent amount of square footage.
Right on. Well, we should take a quick break, hear from our sponsors. We'll come right back and keep talking to the team from Archives up in Burlington, Vermont.
We wouldn't be bourbon as we know it today if it wasn't for whiskeys like Mellow Corn. It's the only one. It's the T.I. double gutter of whiskey. It's the only bottle and bond straight corn whiskey in the world. So when Evan Williams and Elijah Craig and Basil Hayden and Jacob Beam were making whiskey in the 1700s, they weren't making bourbon. They were making unaged corn whiskey. So there's the genesis. You know, we didn't just go to bourbon from that. There was a missing link in between. So I call Mellow Corn the catfish that crawls out of the lake onto the ground and walks around on its fins, because that's the whiskey that made it all happen. Because when it got down to New Orleans and people tasted this whiskey that had been in these barrels on these Kentucky longboats, it had a different color to it and it had a different flavor to it, and the sweetness from the corn instead of the rye heavy from the north. They were like, what is this? And they read the ends of those barrels and it said it was from Old Bourbon, Kentucky. And the contents, because the barrel's not clear, you have to put the contents of it on it, was whiskey. So what they started calling bourbon was this, was Mellow Corn. It was Kentucky straight corn whiskey, not bourbon whiskey. And then when they started aging it in different types of barrels and using more new barrels, and then the laws come in and that kind of stuff, then it became called bourbon. But Mellow Corn and corn whiskey is so historically important. We wouldn't be in this bourbon renaissance today if it wasn't for aged corn whiskey. At Heaven Hill Distillery, they're kind of the keepers of historic brands and labels. So this is the label from 1945, and it's truly American. It was bourbon before bourbon was bourbon.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. It's Todd Shulkin, the host of Inside Julia's Kitchen here on HRN. Inside Julia's Kitchen carries on Julia Child's legacy of introducing the brightest lights in the food world to a wider audience, just as Julia did from her home kitchen. Look for Inside Julia's Kitchen wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
We search therefore, we
And we're back. That was nice hearing from Bernie Lubbers, Bernie, friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Heaven Hill, now sponsor of Heritage Radio and our show specifically. That's pretty great.
Yeah, we got to play some songs together about, like a year and a half ago? A year ago?
About a year ago, yeah, because he comes up here about twice a year. So he was up here again to do that recording with me while you weren't around.
Yeah.
But yeah, great guy. Very charismatic and a great voice and face for radio. Hey, Bernie.
Thanks, Bernie.
He's the best. So let's keep talking about Burlington, Vermont. What's the scene up there? What do you got going? Are you guys the cutting edge? Are you guys the are you cracking the egg on the omelet that everybody's making? What's going on?
I hope we're competitive. there's a lot going on. It's a lot of beer. Alchemist is in Stowe. Hill Farmstead is in the Northeast Kingdom. Burlington, we got Foam. Zero Gravity, Switchback,
Hermit Thrush.
Queen City, Hermit Thrush.
I was about to say, speaking of beer, I noticed there's some here on the table. Are we going to drink that? Yeah. What's the deal?
We should. So this is something.
There are four of them and four of us.
That's interesting.
I'm glad we can count.
Hermit Thrush, they're in Brattleboro, Vermont. They specialize in sour beers.
Great.
They make this one specifically for us. It's a sessionable sour pale ale. Dry hopped, pretty heavy, but not a lot of bitterness. Not super sour, got a good funk to it, some good acidity, really, really nice beer. Funny story about this, we were going to bring two things. The other one is a rum from Mad River Distillers, finished in PX barrels.
I've had that.
When I picked it up from Neil, who manages the tasting room for them, he actually had mentioned that you were in there not long ago when you were in town. We totally
What's
left
up,
that.
Neil?
We totally left that bottle in Burlington with the beer we intended to bring, and a quick Google search told us that it was actually available in the city, so we were really happy to find this.
You had it for us and forgot it, and then just went and found it again.
So the next time you're in Burlington, please come by, and we will buy you some Mad River Distillers PX rum. It really is a fantastic product. So I'm totally bummed that we spaced on that, but
that's a great tasting room too. It's right there, it's like kind of at the like southern end of like the downtown area of Burlington. It's a beautiful spot, and they've got like some cool, like bar tools and like bitters and stuff like that too to like go with it.
Oh,
like,
yeah, the shop is great.
It's really cool.
It's been a great resource to have. It's a quick walk for us from the bar. So anytime we're out of bitters or anything like that, run over to Neil.
And we don't have to order cocktail things from New York anymore. I mean, sometimes we do, but we can buy shakers, a block and a half away, which is nice. Totally.
And support your local shop at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, Burlington, that's sort of in the middle of it where that is. We're about two blocks away, block and a half, give or take. There's Church Street, which has a lot of bars. It's definitely
churches,
where all
churches, I assume?
Just one.
Yeah, just the one at the top.
Just the one.
But that's definitely, it draws a lot of tourists. There are a lot of bars there. It's a great place. And then on the off streets, we're on College Street.
You're a mess.
I'm getting stuff. I've got beer and Cacio e Pepe all over me.
But there's some good cocktail spots right down the road. There's a place called Deli 126. Definitely does like the speakeasy vibe. They do a lot of cocktails. A couple of our former bartenders work over there. Eddie, who is actually a very big fan of your work.
He's very jealous we're here today.
Yeah, he's what's up, Eddie? Super jealous. So how's it going, Eddie? But it's some really great places in Burlington right now. Some awesome beer bars, some really great cocktail spots. The food scene's really taken off as well. Some fantastic restaurants in Burlington.
Some really good restaurants in Burlington.
Yeah. Actually.
Where'd you eat when you were up?
Oh, man, like so many places. I'd have to go back through my archives.
How long ago were you
there? Well done.
Did you check out Honey Road when you were in Burlington?
Yep.
Yeah, that's one of my new favorite spots for sure.
I was so there good. For like basically like a couple days and in Montpelier for like a couple days. But it was just like a whirlwind. You know, but that's the thing is like to me, like my favorite thing to do, like the thing I spend the most money on in my life besides like guitars and motorcycles and hats is food, and like dining out, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, not only like was the food, like when I was in Burlington, like just fucking amazing, but like the vibes up there are like so chill and like everyone, like there's like the hospitality level is like really high, you know? It's a lot of fun. What's the spot that's like, there's like the river with like the dam and then like the
Waterworks.
Oh, yeah.
Waterworks.
That place is so cool.
Yeah.
Man.
Awesome cocktail program.
Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Super cool spot.
Yeah. Just everywhere I went, I was
like, Winooski's super cool too. It's Winooski. Waterworks is in Winooski.
Yeah.
It's probably 10 minutes from downtown Burlington. And it's, I hate to make this comparison. People do it all the time, I'm going to do it. It's kind of the Brooklyn to like Burlington being the Manhattan. It's off to the side. It seems a little younger and hipper and smaller.
Everyone does that.
Everybody does it. I know. I hate that I did it.
We're a litmus. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
We're a touchstone.
I think Winooski in total is about 1 square mile. So.
Well, and Burlington, Burlington's population is 42,000. So Manhattan's not really an apt comparison either.
Yeah. That's still pretty awesome though. So the vibe up there is chill. You know, when I lived in Montpelier, it was a very relaxed and slower attitude, like a pace that's very very island, you know, like island time. Like I'll see you in 30 minutes, and like if 30 means 40, 45, even an hour, you know, great. And no one's upset. No one's ever upset.
Like, yeah, it's like I just think? I realize like kind of like
people cross country ski to work in the winter time. Yeah. Like it's some fucking crazy
snowshoe to work.
It's nuts.
I realized from and just talking with Justin about it, like he was my tour guide, you know, and like I was just like, this is you know what? It's not that this place is necessarily more chill than like anywhere else. It's that we live in New York City.
And we're the
that's
most
just crazy.
Yeah, we're the most opposite of chill. So anywhere we go seems more chill than this.
Exactly.
But up there definitely even more so. So you've been here, you got in yesterday, you stayed last night to come to the show today, but you said you went to a few bars. What is it you see when you look at bars here that maybe is missing up there, or what do you think maybe we're missing down here that you have up there? Has anything come to mind? I know you told me you went to Leanda and you went to Death & Co. 9 doors down from Amore Margo, but you didn't come by. That's fine.
I do want to say I've been there.
Yeah, well,
it's a great bar.
Yeah, it's fine. No, so like, do you notice, like, you know, when I travel, when Damon and I travel, we go to other places and we're like, oh, this place seems like it's like New York, I don't know, 5 years ago, or this place seems like, holy shit, they're doing things that we aren't even doing yet, you know? Like, have you seen anything like that in the short night you were here?
Like, also, like, certain limitations of, like...
oh, yeah, man.
Yeah,
like,
I was gonna say, I'm definitely jealous of just the availability of products in New York. We've definitely seen a lot more. Leanda, specifically, you grabbed the mezcal because you knew we were gonna see it in Vermont when we got home.
Right.
Well, also, like... my friend Sarah, she owns a bar in New Hampshire, and she was like, we just got yellow chartreuse like last year. And I was like, what in the fuck are you talking about?
Right. Man? It's been around since like the almost
New Hampshire
16,
is tougher than 16, Vermont for
1680s.
Sure.
1680s.
But I mean, like, I'm from Oklahoma, so like, I, you know, like being there, like back in the day, is like, I was like, why can't we get this? Like, I'm like, I got a cocktail book and I'm reading about these ingredients that I'll never like see in the state. Right. Obviously, that was like, over 15 years ago, but like, and things have changed, but like, it's kind of crazy. Like, you know, like when certain, like, well, let's
things
talk
that
this
we think are so common.
Too. Yeah.
That can't be gotten. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about this too. Like, there's like a Bar Hill, it's based out of Vermont. Like, their distribution there, I mean, obviously they're like hometown heroes, you know, like being like one of the bigger, like independent, like smaller, like big, small distillery, you know? and also just doing cool things like the gin's just done with like honey and juniper. That's it.
Yeah,
right?
It's a 100% corn distillate, one botanical, and then it's just finished with honey.
Yeah, and it tastes like pineapple too.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Which is kind of crazy.
And then there's a Tomcat that's aged in
barrels.
Yeah. And it's almost its own thing. Like, I kind of, as a category, I feel like it's a barrel aged gin, but because of the honey, it drinks kind of like in a lot of old Tom gins, but it's very much its own thing. Like, I view Tomcat as basically just Tomcat. It's fantastic on its own. It makes a great cocktail as well.
Just make an old fashioned with it.
Exactly.
Hell yeah.
It doesn't need a lot
those
of
are very
other ingredients.
Yeah, so you snapped up some mezcal because you knew you weren't going to get that back at home.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly... Vermont... It can be tough. It's a control state, and there's only so much room in the warehouse in Montpelier. Mm. So there's, you know, pallets and pallets of flavored vodka and a handful of mezcal products. I haven't seen Arequeño in Vermont, and it's one of my favorites.
Right.
The state does make an effort. I constantly email a woman at the state and ask for things. I don't know if there are a lot of other people doing that, but she's always very kind and she responds very quickly.
I mean, I often give advice to people who live in control states, and I'm about to give you some unsolicited, so you can either take it or leave it. listen, you should, you know, the high tide raises all boats, and more voices that cry out for one thing get heard more than a bunch of voices crying out for different things. You should reach out to your other buddies in craft bars and say, hey, let's, whatever, 10 of us all sit down and make a list of the 10 things we wish we had. You know, and if there's a repeat, then one of you gets to keep it, but another one pick another one. So you got 10 different things. And then you, I don't know how, roll some dice and pick which one is first, and all 10 of you ask for that until you get it.
Yeah.
And then you do number two, and all 10 of you ask for that until you get it. Because if 10 of you are asking for 10 different things, you're a whisper. But if 10 of you are crying out for the thing at the same time, it's a scream, right?
Well, and so there also
That's my advice to all you control state listeners.
Actually fantastic
And especially
advice.
Canada. All of it.
There's a bartender actually who used to run the bar at Waterworks. His name is Sam. He used to be on the board that actually chooses the products they order. So having somebody who is in the craft scene,
who has an understanding,
on that board was really helpful. I think he has stepped away from that. He has a family and he's super busy and he's working all the
time.
We're
all busy.
Yeah. So I actually don't know if anybody's replaced him on the board.
I do believe it was someone from USBG.
Okay, so that's
good. That's at least you know, someone who's got an idea, a finger on the pulse in some way. Yeah, I find that to be a real trouble with the control states. You know, I understand that they're running it like a business, and on paper that makes total sense. At the end of the year, the 5% of the things at the bottom of the list that didn't sell, cut them off. That makes sense as a business. What it doesn't make sense as is someone who's delivering to the public. And I have to assume, you know, I jokingly say all the time, if the state were to control food and they were to say, we're not going to carry your favorite fucking brand of mayonnaise, people would be rioting in the street. Meanwhile, they say, we're not going to carry your particular brand of whiskey. They just shrug their shoulders and drink a different whiskey. Mm-hmm. What the fuck? Make some noise.
Gotta have that QP.
QP, man. Need that QP. Need that Duke's mayonnaise. Bring it.
No, and I will say, you know, for Vermont, our liquor board is pretty good about trying to work with us as we
That's a progressive liquor board, you know, because I hear of other ones that are like, eh, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it was
5% of the bottom, just chop it off.
Maybe a year ago now we started talking to them because infusions have actually been illegal in Vermont since forever. So we had some discussions with the liquor board, I think, about a year ago and working on getting that turned over. So we're starting to be able to do infusions and that sort of thing. So
they're starting to be able to do it legally.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody was doing them before.
No. Yeah, but they're good. They want Vermont to really come into the fold and be able to stay relevant and continue to progress. And so
it's all about interpretation of the law as well. You know, it's letter of the law versus spirit of the law, right? And because technically, I don't know if Damon knows this, but in New York State, you can't take anything from a bottle, put it in a secondary vessel, mm-hmm. and finally put it into the drinking vessel, meaning you can't make cocktails.
Well, it means that, like, technically,
you
all of the cocktails
can't pour into a
Yarai
and stir it and then put it in a glass.
Exactly. And that means that also, like, bitters that go into, like, the Dasher bottles from, like, Cocktail mm-hmm. Kingdom and stuff like that, like, it's technically illegal.
Yep.
Batching cocktails is illegal. It's all.
You remember we had the court case with the keg cocktails at Amore. That's how we got this
exactly.
looked at. And they didn't change the law. They just decided not to care. Right? Or not to care, but to be more spirit of the law than letter of the law.
Well, then there was also the
decriminalizing it, basically.
It was thrown out because there's brownie in motion, correct?
No, we tried that and they laughed us out of court. We said the first thing they said was it has to be in motion. So we're doing keg cocktails. We've been doing them since we opened eight years ago. 8 years ago this month.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And we, when we went to court, they said, you know, the only thing you can do a large scale batch like that in is the margarita machine because they did a whole legal thing back in the 80s to get that thing legalized so people could have, you know, and it said
was it the SLA or the DOH that
SLA,
was,
yeah.
was the SLA
and basically the state liquor authority. Basically what they said was it has to be in motion like that thing is like a washing machine spinning around, and at first I was like, well, it's in a keg, it's under brownie in motion because it's carbonated, so it's always kind of moving, mm-hmm. and the judge was like, yeah, nice try. So no, then we had to go get the magnetic stirrer.
Oh right, yeah
large scale magnetic stirrer sits underneath the keg, you put the giant like silicon wrapped metal pill in there, and the stirrer spins the pill.
Let's talk about something else. We proved that could be done,
and then we stopped doing it.
Fucking CBD and cocktails. Mm-hmm. So, Let's get Evan Freeman back on because I know that, like, when I'm in Vermont, the couple times I've been there, I've smoked a lot of weed and, like, been forced to listen to Phish. But New York just shut it down.
Yeah.
Recently, like over the last like week or two, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, I think. Unless you're labeled, right? Unless you're a product that's labeled, you can't. I can't get CBD oil and then add it to a cocktail.
Right.
If I had a bottled cocktail that was labeled for shelf sale and it has CBD in it, that's okay. But as a restaurant or a bar, I can't add CBD as an ingredient. I can't. It can't be my salt.
Do you think this is a temporary thing?
I think it'll probably come around, you know, as states continue to fall and allow, you know, marijuana and THC to be legal. I think it'll obviously come around, but it might take a while.
Because I know that at my bar, like, I'm always like, make it a Royale for $2 extra or whatever.
Make it CBD for $2 extra.
Yeah, exactly. And like, so I know that there was that bakery that got shut down, or they didn't get shut down. They had their product pulled,
right,
because it had CBD.
Well, here's what I think the real contention is that when it's a product that's been, you know, weighed, measured, and labeled and everything, that's got a barcode and all that stuff on there, it's a known dose, right? But when it's just some guy in the kitchen or some guy behind the bar putting some in your drink, we don't know the dosage, right? So it could be low and, like, just have a pleasant time, or it could be super high. You're getting high, too high, you don't be that high. Right, so I think that's the real issue right now, and as soon as we get to a place where that
it's
can be
like more like scheduled,
where that can be more figured out, you know, even that CBD oil, like when I'm making you a drink, we don't know the ABV at the end, but we can have a good idea because we know the ABV of everything that went in. So if we know how much CBD is in that oil, then we know the dosage. So I think that'll be the trail that'll have to go down.
Right.
We should get expert Evan Freeman on to talk about it because that's the field he's in now.
Yeah, exactly.
CBD is big in Vermont.
It is. We actually have a cocktail with CBD, and we buy very small bottles that have 1,000 milligrams per.
Yeah.
We actually haven't done counted exactly how many drops come out of it because they're very expensive. But the person who sells it to us has said it's effectively 10 milligrams per drop.
Sure.
It's really, really highly concentrated. So we do
drop.
Two drops in a cocktail. We put it in one cocktail. It's available in coffee. It's huge in pastries.
A lot of shops opening up that are just focused on CBD.
But yeah. it's an ingredient that is tough to work with, honestly, sometimes. But people really, really like it. I think there are a lot of positive effects of it. I think it works pretty well in the context of the cocktail we use it.
Well, just like alcohol, that there is an effect. People are looking to get, you know, altered. And in whatever way that is.
It's probably not researched enough either, but the only studies that I've read that actually study the effects of CBD with alcohol say that it doesn't really seem to interact the way that THC does with alcohol. It doesn't intensify the effects of the other. So it seems like from the research we've done that it's safe and can be used effectively.
Research.
Well, that's the difficulty is there aren't a lot of published studies on it.
Right, and that's what I think. I think as we get further down the road and more of that actual research happens, it'll loosen up again. But I think it was like it suddenly realized that, whoa, we're heading down into the Wild West here. We need to back off a bit.
And we always try to be aware. I think there are a lot of cocktail programs that kind of use the trendy ingredient of the day that without researching them.
Yep.
And
activated charcoal.
I was just gonna say.
Well, so one of our bartenders, Abby, did an event called Dark Ives. It was kind of a punk night. It was a lot of fun. And we were playing around with ideas for a black cocktail. And the one we ended up with wasn't entirely black, which was, it was a cool, ominous, dark color. But we just didn't want to use activated charcoal because...
Squid ink, baby.
Yeah. Well,
Squid ink is not available in Vermont. I couldn't find it anywhere.
We're going to get some on Amazon. Because that was actually the thought.
Let's talk just real briefly about the beer we're drinking. You said this is made just for you. It's delicious.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Hermit Thrush makes excellent beers. This one is a kettle soured pale ale, moderately sour. It's available always at Archives on Draft, and now they're canning it.
And it's available in Brooklyn now.
Yeah, which is super exciting.
Available in Brooklyn.
This is a very interesting beer to me. Like, I'm not huge into pale ale, and I'm not huge into sours, but this one's like really well balanced and like kind of crushable. And it's a good thing that it's crushable because it's in a giant can. What do you think about like canned beers?
I like it in the can.
All right. what do you think about here? Label out.
Label out.
Doing
like
the photo
boss.
Shoot right now.
Well done.
I just realized it's actually our logo on the bottom here as well.
I'm like psyched about.
Oh no way!
I'm super psyched about
canned
beers.
And it's got
beers.
A little story of our bar on the side of the label.
Cool.
Yeah, we were very excited. The canning just started this year. Yeah, so.
There's something about drinking beer from a can. It's.
Well, you get to use a koozie.
In that. Yes. Yeah, that's always nice.
And you can crush it on your forehead.
That's right.
You actually, like, there was I asked Sam Ross from, well, it was before Attaboy, but like Milk and Honey days. I was like, man, you guys do all these like cocktails and like this, like super like intense old school way, like, but then you use canned, like soda water and tonic and stuff. And I was like, what's that all about, man? And he's like, you can stack them, they don't shatter, and then you can crush them on your forehead. Like, all right, cool, man. But also, like, obviously, like, sunlight doesn't get into them, so it doesn't affect the, like, oxidation of the beer and stuff like that. So, like, I don't know. Also, I think that you can do a lot more, coming from a graphic design background, I think that, like, creating the labels and, like, packaging for cans is, like, way more fun than like doing it for like the smaller label that goes on a glass bottle. Mm-hmm. It's like,
right.
Yeah. And you can crush it on your forehead.
And you can crush it on your forehead.
That's most important.
That's going to be the name of this episode. And you can crush it on your forehead. Well, guys, thanks for being with us in the studio today, all the way down from Burlington's Archives Bar. Allison,
let's go up there. Let's visit.
We're going to go.
Please
yeah,
do.
Yeah, definitely stop in.
Let's go when it's warmer.
Definitely.
Yeah, we're not going right now.
Vermont in the summer is
Allison Marlar, Sean McKenzie, here. Thanks for coming on down. And thanks for, you know, like keeping a scene alive up there, and making it prosper. You know, I think it's, you guys got a harder road to hoe than we do down here. We got a target rich environment. I think up there, you got a scrap and claw. Absolutely. For everybody. You can get to come in and play some video games and drink some craft beer and have a craft cocktail as well. That's good. Those are good steps, right?
Absolutely.
Get them when they're young. They'll play the games.
Yeah.
They'll drink a beer, then move them up to a cocktail and send them down to New York. I really want to thank you guys for being with us today. It was great fun talking to you. And
thanks for having us.
Thanks for being avid listeners of the Speakeasy. Before we wrap up this episode, I want to mention, I don't know if you saw it, Damon, but I posted it out on all my media. You know, Chris Reed over at Bargo.
You're the only person I follow on social media, so yes.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect. Chris Reed, great friend of ours at Bargoto. I'm very vocal about the fact that it's my favorite bar in New York City.
It's our go-to.
Go-to. That's right. Chris was diagnosed with ALS back in May, so it's been about a year. And they told him that probably by May of this year he won't be able to work behind the bar anymore. So we started a GoFundMe page for him. You can look for support Christopher Reed in his fight against ALS. We're shooting for $250,000. We've already got $40,000 in the past 7 days. Just to cover some related costs that he's incurring, it turns out that traditional medicines aren't helpful for him, and the medicines that are helpful for him aren't covered by insurance. So he's kind of doubling out of pocket, and he's about to honestly be robbed of his ability to do his job by this disease that will eventually rob him of his life as well. And what a great and charismatic character he is, and just a really well-known, respected bartender in our community. So if you have even a dollar, head on over to that GoFundMe page and hit up Chris's account and put some money in there and wish him well. He'll appreciate it. I'll appreciate it as well. I'll repost it again on Speakeasy Podcast, Twitter, as well as Instagram.
Great dude.
He's a great guy, and he's going at it with such a cheerful attitude. Nothing's seeming to bother him. As he continues to lose, you know, motor function, and frankly, the ability to talk is one of the first things that goes. And it's hard to be a bartender if you can't speak. Kenta has often said that Chris Reed's weapon is his voice, and so he's being robbed of his weapon.
Yeah.
All right, so that's it for this this week's Speakeasy, guys.
I do want to say something.
Oh yeah, get in there.
More positive note.
Oh yeah, sure. Let's finish on a more positive note.
If anyone's out in Las Vegas on the weekend of the 15th and 16th, I'll be guest bartending at On the Record in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand, and Questlove, or one of his, in my conspiracy theory about Questlove, one of his many clones.
Yeah, because he's everywhere.
There's no way they can actually be like everywhere. It's insane. But
he's triplets is what
I'm also like really excited about. He'll be DJing with me on the 16th, and then on the 15th, I'm really excited about this. Being the Oki that plays in a country band, it's kind of funny to say this, but like DJ Newmark is like one of my favorite DJs from Jurassic 5. He's going to be DJing with me on the 15th. So come out to Las Vegas and come to the MGM Grand, and we'll have some cocktails together.
And a grand time. All right. Well, that's it for this week's Speakeasy. MGM Thank you so grand much, Army. Guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
All right. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Want more of the Speakeasy? Follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at Speakeasy Radio. You can find Damon at Damon Bolte, and you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform and give us a star rating, 5 if possible. If you're visiting New York City or a resident, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand to make sure we'll be here. We'd love to see you. And please support our show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the beating heart to donate.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter. Our handle is @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.